Welcome to BBS Radio Late Night. This is Flying Higher, and I'm Gina Jones, your host this evening. For those of you who are joining us for the first time, I'm the founder of Seeing the Light Productions and the author of Flying Between Heaven and Earth. Flying Higher is a unique and enlightening program on BBS Radio Late Night, and we're here to help inspire everyone to a new altitude, high above the turbulence of our limiting beliefs and the dark storms of our negativity that cloud our daily lives. And each Sunday, I ask that you join us as we have listeners around the world. So we learn ways to lighten up and to raise our vibration, to raise our consciousness so that we can be of service to others in anticipation of the ascension, the dimensional shift that is prophesized in the Mayan sacred calendar. And this evening, I am honored and thrilled to have Dr. Richard Jelusic with us. He has been teaching and giving lectures and workshops for over 20 years. Richard, I'm so thrilled to have you with us this evening, and it's a great honor for you to spend this evening with us to help enlighten us about a few things that a lot of people are just hearing about, especially about chakras. How are you this evening?
Well, thank you, Gina. I'm glad to be here.
Yes. Thank you so much. And before we get started, I'd like to brag a little bit about you, if I may.
Thank you.
I've had the pleasure of hearing Dr. Jelusic at two different events and was just amazed at what this man has brought forth in information. I figured, Richard, that you must have given up eating and sleeping to have done as much as you have and to have the knowledge and the wisdom that you have, as well as the talents and abilities that you have brought forth. Richard is the Dean of Administration and Core Faculty at the California Institute of Human Science. Is on the board of directors as well, and you have your PhD, I understand, in human science, and
yes.
Your research work is in light and sound, and is a blending of metaphysics and science, which I'm sure has got to be very, very interesting, and you are also a gifted intuitive and an energy worker, so again, I don't know how you get all this into a 24-hour period, but again, we're so thrilled to have you here this evening to share this with us here on Flying Higher. And I admire you because you really understand how to keep this simple and how you really are trying to work at demystifying metaphysics. And this is a term that a lot of people are just now coming to understand. And how you are able to heal and empower people on multiple levels.
Yeah, and it definitely keeps me pretty busy.
Yes, I can understand that. You've written a book, The
yep.
Eye of the Lotus, The Psychology of Chakras. Before
yep.
we get into that, maybe you could just sort of tell people who may be learning about this for a first time what a chakra is and exactly what we'll be talking about this evening.
Well, everyone has seven chakras. They're more or less lined up with the column of the spine. And, of course, the difficult thing is they're there and they're not there. You know, they've been written about for centuries, but the idea of actually seeing one is you can't physically observe a chakra with any of your five senses, even though they're there. So this is why it's just so difficult to explain. But one of the main things about chakras is that they are indeed transformers, but not just energy like fuel from one dimension to another. It's like having seven different minds, and each one affects mental, physical, spiritual, and emotional states of being. Hence, each one is a little bit different in the way that it causes us to perceive how we move about in this dimension, and thus our perceptions change, and thus our reactions. So if we understand that you can have a chakra that's more dominant than the others, how it might affect the way you perceive reality, then, of course, it would help you empower yourself to live a better life.
Okay. I understand your book, The Eye of the Lotus, is called The Psychology of the Chakras. This is with Lotus Press Publishing, and I understand you've got a second printing now, which is very exciting.
Yes.
Now, it's interesting because I thought of chakras as more or less like a part of my body, like my hand or my liver or something like that. I find this interesting in your title, Eye of the Lotus, Psychology of the Chakras. Could you tell me a little bit more about what your book is about and what exactly that means?
Well, sure. I mean, the premise is that each chakra affects mental, physical, spiritual, emotional states of being, meaning that each chakra affects the way we perceive reality, as I just said.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea being, like, if you might be right or left-handed or right or left-eye dominant, chakras are very much the same. And when I'm working with someone, I can see that one might be a little bit more dominant, although all seven are working just fine, that one person might tend to use one chakra more than another. Hence, it affects the way that they react to and perceive reality as it is. And it also sets up the way that people react to each other. So in other words, if one dominant chakra person encounters another one, maybe a different dominant chakra, on some level of our being, we recognize this very clearly. And it causes us to take what I call a psychic relationship to each other long before the mind ever thinks a single thought. To me, we are extremely eloquent beings, and mm-hmm. that we have this very beautiful interaction take place. It's just that the problem is most of us who are born in the West, we're empiricists by nature, meaning, you know, we test something to see if it's real, verifiable, and repeatable. So the thing about chakras and metaphysics itself is it cannot be viewed directly, and it's what I tell my students, it's like the light from a flashlight. You know, the light is not the flashlight, and the map is not the topography. So the book is a book of my observations, my opinions, about, you know, how chakras can be dominant, how they can have higher and lower aspects in a person's life. And, of course, it goes through the different chakras and talks about the key traits of each chakra and how it affects personality and how a person can, you know, read this book and get something out of it to empower their lives to understand why they react the way they do. And hopefully to get people to understand that everyone is intuitive. We all have the ability, but like I said, it's so difficult to explain directly that we have a lot of trouble understanding how to get our hands around it.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm curious, I think of the old question, which came first, the chicken or the egg? Are you saying that the chakras came first and then we become sort of a manifestation of that, or is it the other way around?
The easiest way to think about it would be like if you have a flashlight and you turn on the beam and you shine the beam against a wall. Now, the mm-hmm. light's not the flashlight, but you can very clearly see the beam on the wall. So you and I in this dimension are a lot like that beam of light. And when the beam is withdrawn from the astral dimension, let's say, and goes back to the flashlight, like if you were to pass away, they would say, oh, there is that person's body. But they don't say that's you. They say it's the body which goes back into the constituent materials of Earth. So in other words, we are more of an emanation, a quality of being that is emanating from a higher dimension into this dimension. And when that period of time, quote unquote, is over with, that light, as it were, is withdrawn, and then we pass on and then incarnate again and again and so forth. So it's more mm-hmm. from higher to lower than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Now, is everyone dominant in one chakra more than the others?
Well, I've been doing this work for about 20 years, and I notice that people tend to stay in one dominant chakra more than the others. And, you know, certain people are disposed to ask different types of questions, like a person with a strong second chakra would ask me, what is the probability distribution spread among the population, you know? And by far, most people are dominant to second chakra. But just bear in mind, you know, there are people that believe that the higher up your body a chakra is, the more developed it must be, and it just doesn't work that way. You have seven chakras, and each one has its own uniqueness, and which one is more dominant really doesn't matter whether it's higher or lower on the body. Most people are dominant to second chakra. That's the one just below the navel. It's called the sacral or Svadhisthana chakra.
Okay. Now, I understand you've got over 95 different healing training students in the United States and Canada, and you obviously travel extensively teaching a 17-level, two-year course on spiritual healing and philosophy as a whole human being.
Yeah.
What would one learn in this course, and what are these?
Well, there's 17 levels, like you said. It takes a little over 2 years to complete. And the reason it takes that long is because the mind takes a lot of time to get used to interpreting what one observes in a higher dimension and then speaking about it. So my healers are trained in two ways. One is to do the energy work and to perceive what's going on in the other person. And secondly, to interpret and talk about what they see, because if they have to give it language, it means they have to exercise their abilities to look at some higher level awareness and turn it into everyday speech. And so part of the courses are techniques, and part of the courses are philosophy, learning Eastern philosophy, learning the feminine principle, which is the, using the will to allow instead of push, learning how to allow instead of protect. And by the time they get finished, I think a very well-rounded student turns out. So right now, as you say, I've got ongoing students in the U.S. and Canada, of which three groups will graduate this year.
Oh, that's very exciting. That is, that's wonderful that they can go out and help so many of us understand why we do the things we do and how we work and what we're here to do with that. Now, where does the actual programming, if for lack of a better word, come for the chakras, where we evolve into these manifestations? I mean, where does that come from? Does that make sense? I'm not sure if I'm asking the question correctly.
Well, let me take it in a direction I suspect you might be going, and let's see what we get.
Okay.
There's basically three dimensions of individuation. You have your physical body, and a lot of us use a term called astral plane or astral dimension. That's the next one. Mm-hmm. The one above that is called a causal dimension, and these relate to the personality, the soul, and the monad. So the physical, astral, and causal are the personality, soul, monad. And chakras exist in all three levels. And as long as there's a chakra, there's a form of individuation. As long as there's individuation, there's a level of illusion of separation from the oneness in which we exist. So chakras exist, therefore the karma exists within the chakras. But the chakras are more refined, so in the higher dimensions. So for instance, anything that has a physical presence has an astral body. And so, say, a human being who has seven chakras would also have seven in the astral dimension, but you wouldn't have glands or organs in that dimension. There'd be some form of an energy distribution system to maintain a uniqueness of yourself, but no physical movement of energy. Mm-hmm. It would be more in what I call a qualitative state. But still, there's levels of attachment in these dimensions, and hence the individuation. So when chakras are awakened, let's say you and I do lots of prayer and meditation and spiritual practices, and we start to awaken our chakras in the astral or causal dimension, then we start to see things as they are, not as they appear to be.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's really difficult, even awkward, because, you know, the higher sense perceptions don't work in the same way as the five senses. And so without adequate training or someone who can help you, you can have a little bit of confusion in what you're seeing. And bear in mind, you know, everyone is intuitive, but I believe that most of us have been taught to just discount it as irrelevant because
right.
It's not necessarily physically verifiable.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Okay. Now, can someone change their chakra if they, you know, they feel like they are out of balance? Is there something
yes.
that can be done? Is this the work that you and your students?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I teach my students extensively on the chakras themselves, and even the book itself has a huge appendix with all kinds of exercises, meditations, prayers. Even a wonderful director of a yoga school, Madhu Honeyman, has written a great chapter in the appendix on Hatha yoga exercises to tonify and balance each chakra. There's
mm-hmm.
also essential oils and light and sound techniques. Because everybody's different, so everybody will use different techniques. But if someone is taking my training, for instance, I will show them ways to do the balancing. Of course, ways to observe in people which chakra is dominant, what its major traits are, and of course what we're actually doing in my students is I'm having my students use their chakras to see the people on the table. In other words, helping them to awaken their own chakras so that they truly start to see things as they are. That's why I tell my students it doesn't really matter after you graduate that you actually go and do healing work, because if you really apply this training, then your presence is going to tend to be very healing wherever you go, because 95% of all communication is not verbal or physical, it's energy. That's how we're taking a psychic relationship to each other, and time or space is irrelevant. So you know, when I'm doing my private sessions, I have phone clients from Hawaii to Israel, and I never really have to meet them. It's not necessary because even in just the astral dimension, there's no time or space. So
right.
when my healers are learning how to do healing, it doesn't matter that the client is in the room or not. They can still very accurately determine what's going on with that person and then do healing work.
Well, this sounds very interesting. For anybody who may be interested in taking one of your courses, where do you teach this, or how is it that they can register for this? And is there an actual semester or begin date when these classes will be starting?
Right now, I'm officially starting a new group in Calgary, Canada, on July 14th and 15th. I may start a group in San Diego. And I'm willing to start groups in certain areas if I get enough students to do so. So right now, I have students in Vancouver, Calgary, Las Vegas, and San Diego. So the premise is eventually I will have it set up to where I may just do teachings in just two areas, maybe just Calgary and San Diego. But right now, I'm still doing a considerable amount of traveling, teaching the students pretty much where they live.
Mm-hmm. Now, is this like Monday through Friday, or is this a weekend workshop?
It's
what kind
weekend.
Of hours are involved in this?
It's a weekend,
weekend.
Four weekends
okay.
a year, so two levels in a weekend, which is really heavy, heavy training, because most people really do not understand spiritual healing. They tend to confuse it with Reiki, and those two are very different forms of healing. So it's four weekends a year, and a weekend would be from 10 to 4 or 10 to 5 each day, Saturday and Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It consists of an hour, hour and a half lecture or more, which I put on CD for every student. And then from day one, students are up and working.
Okay.
And there's lecture, there's teachings in philosophy, but there's also experiential exercises to give the students their own personal experience so they can grow and learn.
Okay, great. And so for more information, they should contact the California Institute of Human Science. Is that correct?
No, they should contact me.
You?
I guess this would be a good point to cut the two in each section.
Okay.
For me, I teach the healer's training, and I do the flower readings and the private sessions and the past life workshops. And I also work at the California Institute for Human Science as Dean of Administration and Core Faculty. And so there I'm also working with, research, and of course it's a graduate center. And we have students there that are both on campus and, of course, distance learning students who learn online. Right now we're doing a wonderful psychoacoustics course that we're just finishing up. Next quarter we'll be doing a quantum physics course online, among others. So there's really two halves to what I do. So the healing training is something that I have on my own.
Ah, excellent. Well, thank you for clarifying that. So for the healer's training, they should reach you where?
At my website, which is www.lightnews.org. That's LIGHTNEWS.ORG. Lightnews.org.
Thank you, Dr. Jesus. I appreciate the clarification on that. And this is so unique and so specific. How did you come into this?
Well, I guess the blunt answer would be I've been doing this in other lifetimes. But, I had a very normal upbringing. You know, my dad owned a shipyard, and I worked for my dad for many years and was his machine shop foreman. I ran cranes and tugboats and could do anything with my hands. And then I went into aerospace and had final assembly responsibility for space launch vehicles. I've been to Cape Canaveral many times. But around 1987, I had always known since I was a child that there was something different. In fact, I'll tell you candidly, I knew when I was a little boy I was going to be a priest and a doctor, but I didn't know what that meant because it was very confusing to me.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes.
In the early 90s, I became an ordained spiritualist reverend, and in 99, I obtained my PhD in human science.
Oh,
so there you go.
There you go. That's very interesting. Now, it's interesting, too, because you have a lot of these intuitive gifts and healing gifts as well. And back when I had first found out about you and I was going through your website, I found out that you do flower healings, which I think is, flower readings, which
flower
I think
readings,
is very unique. I had never heard that before. And I'm certainly one that is very drawn to the metaphysics and to esoteric sciences. I've had the palm readings, I've had signature readings, aura readings, psychic readings, but never a flower reading. So I think that is so very unique. Maybe you could share with our listeners a little bit about that and explain to them what you do.
Oh, sure.
And how that's done.
Well, flower readings are very popular. You know, for instance, in Canada, in Calgary, there's a waiting list of 70 people who want to host them. And the premise of a flower reading is it's a group function, 12 people or less. Everyone brings a flower that they've held. It's put on a table, and then I come into the room. So, of course, the deal is anonymity. I don't know who brought which flower, and in many instances, I've never met the people before either. So the idea is I sit at the table, and I pick up one flower at a time, shut my eyes, and do a reading and then some healing work, which, of course, I put on CD for everybody. And then when the evening's over, when I'm done with all 12 flowers, each flower takes about 10, 11 minutes. When I'm done with all 12 flowers, then, you know, sometimes I'll ask, okay, well, that was interesting. Who was that? You know, and sometimes people share and sometimes they don't. So I'm careful in a group setting to, you know, give really relevant information but very respectful. But just to give you an idea, you know, there was a one woman that came to a flower reading course. Again, it's anonymous. I don't know who I'm reading for, but there's 12 women in this group. And I told this one woman that in the 12th century, she was a male, what do they call it, samurai in Japan, which is very difficult sometimes to believe because it's easy to pull out of the hat. So I said, in that lifetime as a male, there was an assassination attempt against you, and you were shot in the back with an arrow through the left scapula, but it became non-lethal because you were wearing body armor cut to look like dark blue fish scales front and back. I said, so this lifetime, you have a birthmark on the your back of your shoulder, the diameter of the arrow, another birthmark around that from where the tissue was you know, damaged by the bamboo and the arrow, and then you also have muscle spasms, left scapula, plus other issues. And so basically at the end of the flower reading, I was curious, you know, at the end of the evening, I said, well, who is that? And so this woman raised her hand, and I said, does that feel like you? She says, yes. So the other women ushered her into the washroom, lifted up the back of her shirt, you know, and she has the double birthmark on her back. And, of course, she has the muscle spasms. So I have been able to see into past lives very clearly, and also some of the things surrounding the person, like, you know, what bushes were growing there and what were the circumstances. And the reason why I throw in some physical information like that that's very hard to deny is because then the person might think, oh, well, you know, if he was accurate about that, maybe he's accurate about the other stuff too. So it's done in order to help people to stand on their own two feet as spiritual beings and to help them recognize much more of their true selves, you know, who they really are. And so when you start giving information like that in a flower reading, of course, you definitely get people's attention. Of course, then I record everything so that they can listen to it because I cover a ton of information in a short time.
And why is it that you're using flowers?
That's just what I started with. You know, when I was going through the ministry, we asked the people there to next week bring a flower, mark it so you know it's yours, but don't let us see it. So the next week there were 40 flowers on a table for two of us. So, this was 1992 in February, and I read 20 flowers, just quick little things, and I thought, you know, this is a great way to give information to somebody because I have no idea who I'm reading for. Therefore, that really puts it to the test. If the metaphysics is real, then the information will be real. So then it just took off from there, and I've been doing flower readings now, last month, 15 years.
Now, are flowers more receptive to the person's energy, than anything else, or it could be jewelry or shoes? Or
It could be anything, and you would laugh because, you know, sometimes people do bring other things. Like, this one person brought a one-pound bag of flour to the flower reading. You know, flour.
Wrong kind of flour. Different flour, okay. But it works, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it could be rocks, it could be anything. But, you know, flowers are a lot like you and I. You know, we're always blooming and becoming. So I just stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now, you know, they've become, in the past 6 days, I've done 67 flower readings.
Wow.
Every night.
And how do you shut this off so that you can have your own time as far as when you go to bed or you rest, where you can sort of disconnect from their energy? Do you keep the flowers or do you take the flowers with them?
I've been doing this a long time, you know, for one thing. But also I rest, and I have healing work done on me too, and I exercise. So I take really good care of myself, because anyone that looks at my calendar can see I do travel quite a bit and do a lot of work.
Okay, and again, how would they contact you if they have a group, you said, of 12 or less to do flower readings or to organize?
Anybody can host a flower reading. You know, I'm going to be going back to New York and Massachusetts later this year, back to Seattle. I'm going to Chicago this next week. I'm happy to come to an area, just as long as it's feasible for me to do so. But they can contact the website, lightnews.org. And from there, they can go to my email. And also, there's a phone number they can call if they wish.
Great. Well, that's very, very exciting and certainly does test this whole concept of readings and past lives and all of that information in a very wonderful way to, again,
nice thing,
you know, verify.
Nice about, yeah.
No, I'm
the
just
nice
saying they
about,
verify it. Sorry, go ahead.
The nice thing about flower readings is that it's up front and personal. You know, there's no smoke and mirrors involved. It's just me and 12 other people, and you know, they know I have no idea who I'm reading for, and I couldn't even give the flowers back to the owners at the end, because when I'm looking, I don't see the person. I see what I call the soul, which is astral and then even causal dimension. So there's just so many things I could tell you about flower readings, you know, instances of people having these incredible experiences, and of course the birthmarks are always phenomenological. People love that. But more to the point, you know, if I bring in a past life, I'm only talking about it, about how it's relevant to this one. You know, how to help the person realize, you know, more of who they really are, and not just a limited being of this dimension.
Right. We're talking about dimensions again, and you mentioned earlier about spiritual counseling sessions that you can do by phone, and that people can be, you mentioned Israel or other countries.
Oh, sure.
How does that work? Is this, again, connected to the astral? Can you explain that a little bit more to me so I can clear
well,
about how
sure.
you're doing this?
Sure. Let's go back a couple of steps. 95% of all communication is not verbal or physical.
Right.
So here you and I are having a conversation over the phone, and, of course, it's being broadcast on the Internet. So let's say, you know, I've had clients call from Switzerland and England and Greece and other places, and some people certainly I'm probably never going to meet. So how would I know what to say? Because the whole point of metaphysics is rooted in faith. So one of my very fine teachers, Dr. Motiyama, he says things like, you know, yoga without faith is just stretching, and prayer and meditation without faith is just thinking. In other words, your reach has to extend beyond your grasp. So the way that I do it is I trust precisely that I really can read a person at that depth of their soul as to why were they born. You know, what did they incarnate to do? You know, what's the major thing they came in this lifetime to do, and what did they come to learn? And what are their strengths, and what are their weaknesses, and what are the mental, physical, spiritual, emotional states of who they are and what they represent? So I'm a lot more of a how-to person. In other words, like when people come to me, a lot of times it boils down to, tell me what's going on, tell me what to do about it, tell me how to do it. So when I'm reading for somebody, let's say, calls from another country, I'm focusing not just on what's going on, but why, and what they can do about it. So a lot of times when women will call me, I'll say, would you like to talk about your family? You know, so in other words, if they say, for instance, yes, let's talk about my children. I'll say, well, okay, how many do you have? What are the ages and what are the names? And the children that come through are what I call fetal spirits, you know, the ones that come in through the female. And I can read their dominant chakras and their characteristics and strengths and weaknesses. And, of course, the whole idea is to help the person who's calling me to understand how they relate to each other, you know, what is the familial and the parental karma, and, of course, how they can lead a more empowered life. So I stay away from the religious overtones, and I focus on the spiritual aspect, which is, you know, I tell my students, religion is easy, but spirituality is very difficult because it requires you yourself to open your heart to trust. So in other words, faith is trusting with your heart, which your mind cannot yet know. And I have to do the same thing when I'm reading somebody from, say, halfway around the world, and that's exactly how it works. And so the more I look, the more I see, and I can give them very specific, very relevant information.
Mm-hmm. Now, I understand that a lot of people use the analogy of the onion, that we have all these layers to us, and as you know, sort of peel back one, then you find another, and maybe even carryovers from past lives. Can your work be done in one session, or do you find that maybe there some people require several sessions, or
well,
how
this
does
is
this
one
work?
Well, I hope it can be done in one session, but this mm-hmm. is why I make a CD, you know, and then send it to the person, because I cover so much information that when they use the CD, a lot of times people don't realize that I tend to speak in layers, analogies, metaphors, even allegory as a teaching tool, so they can use their CD, like me sending them to the chakra gym, right? Unless
right.
they work out, they're not going to achieve results. And a lot of times these issues, to answer your question, a lot of issues people have are repetitive, and some issues are not necessarily made to be overcome as to how they're dealt with, because life really isn't so much about goals as it is about effort. It's the effort a person expends that defines the nature of their character in a given lifetime. So as they expend the effort, then how they did that defines how much they attach to the karma or the dharma of the event, and how it helps develop the nature of what happens the next time that challenge comes. Maybe they'll handle it much better. So if I'm explaining to someone, hey, you know, this is how this happens and this is why, then they have a much better way of dealing with it in the future. So, for example, one of the chapters in my book is called How to Prevent Psychic Manipulation. And when I got halfway through writing the chapter, I kind of had my tongue in cheek, and I thought, wait a minute, if I'm telling them how to prevent it, I'm also telling them how to do it. So I thought, okay,
exactly.
Well, this is in the karma of the person who's reading the book. But the reason why I put it in there is to help people to be aware that this is, in fact, done from time to time. People do manipulate others. There are people that do that. And if you know what it is and when it's coming, well, then you're self-empowered. And
exactly.
Psychically, you know, sad but true, you know, there are people that do that. And, you know, it is a real world. It's why those harmless little monks have great big doors on their monasteries.
Okay, I just want to take a break here. For those who have just joined us, this is Flying Higher on BBS Radio Late Night. I'm Gina Jones, and this evening we have Dr. Richard Jelusich with us. And he can be reached at www.lightnews.org. And we are talking about his book, The Eye of the Lotus, The Psychology of the Chakras. And Dr. Jelusich, I understand you also have another book that will be coming out shortly. Is there anything that you want to share with the audience about that?
Yeah, it has a working title, The Book of Reciprocity. And the first book is The Eye of the Lotus, The Psychology of the Chakras. This would be more like the sociology. So, for instance, it has 30 case histories of people, let's say man and wife, who these are actual histories of one has one dominant chakra, maybe fifth chakra, and the other one fourth chakra, and then how they relate to each other and what are the inverse relationships of the dynamics of that relationship. So I think this book would be very helpful because in it is a chapter on how to determine your own dominant chakra, or at least very close, and how then it would help define how you relate to other people and what you expect.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned the seven chakras.
Mm-hmm.
And my understanding, there's sort of a general location on the body. Maybe you could sort of go through what each chakra represents and sort of the area where on the body it might be, just for those who
oh,
really
sure.
have just no understanding, or just a very, very basic understanding, or may have just heard the word or the term.
I'd be happy to. Just remember, they're there and they're not there. So if I say throat
right.
and you go look in the mirror, you're not gonna optically see it, but you can feel it. And
okay.
remember, you know, I do work at a research institute, and we know that the chakras cause the body to give off 100 to 1,000 times more photons of light than anywhere else in the body. But that's what the chakra does. It's not what it is. So
right.
you can observe what happens. It's like when you see a spark, that's the force of electricity, but it's not the electricity itself. It's little molecules being ionized and giving off photons of light. So, you know, like no one's ever seen electricity or magnetism or gravity, but these forces are common. So metaphysics is very similar. So the root chakra is at the perineum of the body. That's where your legs join together at your body. That's the root chakra, also called Muladhara. Takes one whole chakra just to physically be here. Just to be in this dimension takes up one whole chakra. That's the root.
Okay.
The second chakra is just below the navel. That's called the sacral chakra. It's also called Svadhisthana. And the second chakra chapter in my book is 5,000 words longer than any other chapter because we have more stuff going on in that chakra than any other. It's what I call the visceral chakra because it's more connected to your five senses than any other chakra.
Mm-hmm.
It is creativity, burdens, responsibility, sexuality, sensuality. It's kind of like the salsa of what it is to be a human being. And, of course, in a woman, you see where the second chakra is, right where the reproductive organs are.
Okay. The
third chakra is above the navel. That's called solar plexus or Manipura. Takes a whole third chakra just to have a uniqueness, just to be individuated over and against the world itself. So the third chakra is about personal power, uniqueness, and truth. The fourth chakra is the heart. We know where that is. That's called Anahata. And that one has to do with the profundity of what love represents. So it's exactly what you think it is. And very interestingly, in our psychoacoustics class about a week and a half ago, we had a Dr. Ted Quigley, wonderful man, teaching, and he had us do an exercise where we'd raise our index finger, and then he said, now I want you to point to yourself. And every one of us pointed towards our heart. We didn't point towards our head. He said, that's the you. That's where you are. And it's very interesting, we'd point towards our heart. The next one is in the throat. That's called the throat chakra, number 5. It's also called Vishuddhi. Vishuddhi means purification. And the throat chakra is about communication, to be sure. And communication takes two forms. You know, it's outward, I'm speaking, I'm writing, I'm emailing. It's inward, I'm listening, I'm perceiving, I'm sensing. But more importantly, the throat chakra is about comprehension. The sixth chakra is the brow center, or the third eye. It's also called Ajna. And it's about a much higher paradigm of communication than the throat chakra. So it would be like another octave above the throat chakra. The seventh chakra is at the crown of the head, and that's called that's called Sahasrara. Sometimes hard to say. And it's the crown chakra, and that has to do with higher levels of metaphysical awareness, that you understand that there are even higher levels of being. Every chakra has a higher and a lower aspect. When you're in the higher aspects of the chakras, you're living well, you're understanding, you're doing what's called your dharma or your right action. When you're in the lower aspects, you're more heavily into the illusion and you're suffering. Every chakra has a to-do and a to-learn. So, for instance, the person with the strong throat chakra, what they come to do is to communicate or to teach or to articulate what others cannot know. And what they come to learn is to trust what they're feeling, but not whether they're feeling. A second chakra person would come to be the visionary or one who sees the big picture and one who can see more than the group around them. But what the second chakra person comes to learn is self-approval, what they do is good enough, how to establish healthy emotional boundaries, and so forth. So every chakra has higher and lower aspects. It has a to-do and a to-learn. And all these little fundamental aspects that go along with each one And just remember, you know, I'm talking about my own personal perceptions, you know, in writing this book. It's how I see people relating to each other. So it's just a book of opinions, but it's designed to get you to really think about, you know, how do you relate to other people, and what mm-hmm. would it be like if you used your higher sense perceptions to empower yourself to a more authentic life?
Well, that is certainly fascinating. I was just thinking when you were talking about all of that, how have you seen any similarities or overlays with someone's astrology or their numerology or their cards of destiny? Because I find that those are very accurate. We were laughing and joking on the last show. I felt like when I first found out about my astrology through Linda Goodman's Sun Signs and a little tear out of Cosmo magazine when I was 16 years old, I felt like someone had followed me around. It was like, my goodness, it was like everything was about me. So I'm just wondering if you see parallels or, you know, overlaps or consistency in throughout your research with this.
Yeah, I believe Linda's been to a flower reading, actually. But I haven't taken the time to look at the numerology and the astrology. I'm sure there's parallels, but I just haven't gotten into that direction yet. There's mm-hmm. so many other things that my life is taking me. For instance, in June, I'm doing a program with a periodontist who is actually one of my graduates in Calgary, and for the first time ever, we're going to put on this huge program for periodontists and hygienists, and it's a one-day seminar, for instance, where half of the day is what's going on in periodontics. The other half of the day is I'm going to talk about what goes on between the hygienist and the person in the chair energetically.
So I'm
taking this in different directions to help people understand how they relate to each other, and I'm starting to work more and more on the professionals in different industries.
Mm-hmm.
Help them understand the energetics.
Well, that's certainly helpful, especially with dentistry, because there's so many people who have such a tremendous fear and come in with a lot of issues with that. Most people don't go unless they have to, or, you know, feel like, you know, it's, oh my God, it's that time. So I think that would be highly beneficial for the people in that field. And I guess when you're not busy doing that, Richard, you're also taking groups every year down to the Yucatan.
Oh, yeah.
To study the cosmology of the Maya, and you're doing this until the year 2012. So,
yes.
Like I said, I think you really have given up sleeping and eating. I really don't know how you do this. You're an amazing person.
Those groups are very popular. We had 29 people go down last November 26th down to the Yucatan. We went to Chichen Itza and Uxmal. This year I'm doing two groups. One is a repeat of last year of activating the chakras at seven sacred sites in the Yucatan from November 26th to December 3rd. And then we're doing another thing December 4th through 13th, which is called the Flight of the Stellar Serpent. And that is going to be going to Yaxchilan, to Tikal, and Palenque. And I talk about the cosmology of the Mayans, and, you know, what really does this alignment mean in terms of the activation of energetics. And I try to stay away from all the phenomenological buzzwords and relate it more to what's actually happening. So I'll throw some astronomy software in there, and I'll talk about energies like what's called a Shishumna, which is the main channel of energy that goes through the chakras, and how the Mayans knew about this main energy channel in the body, and how it's replicated when there is the equinox at Chichen Itza, and you see that light and dark pattern on mm-hmm. the pyramid itself. So these trips are for people who really want to study the Maya seriously, and I co-teach with a wonderful shaman, extremely well-educated man, Miguel Angel Vergara. So between the two of us, we lecture and we do ceremony and meditations and teach and just have a great time.
And how long are these trips? Are they a week or how many days?
They're about nine days each. Mm-hmm.
Okay, and again, to find out about that, they go to lightnews.org?
They can go to my website, or they can go to Sacred Earth Journeys. It's all stuck together, sacredearthjourneys.ca. CA means Canada. Helen Tomei is a wonderful tour coordinator. She runs tours all over the world. And sacredearthjourneys.ca is her company.
Richard, I'm sorry.
I was just saying she flawlessly puts these trips together so that Miguel and I can just concentrate on teaching. And, of course, that's what makes a great journey when everything's taken
mm-hmm.
care of.
Right. Now, as we continue to move forward to 2012, are you seeing any changes, I'm not sure the terms to use regarding the chakras. Do you see any shifts occurring? Is there anything that you can, with your gifts, your perception that you see that is happening?
Well, it was Goethe who said that in times of great light, there's great shadow. So you're seeing tremendous polarity nowadays. Anybody with a laptop and a Wi-Fi connection can bring the teachings of the Dalai Lama right to their doorstep. But also you see such tragedy in the world today, and of course natural calamities. And so it would be better to think of this time as a great opportunity to grow. But after 2012, it doesn't mean the world's going to end. It's the end of a cycle. Just like a wave that comes in and hits the beach, and if you're a surfer, you know, you want to catch the best wave, and this wave form that's coming at 2012 is coming now. And so the idea is always about balance. Anytime you ever talk about metaphysics, doesn't matter whether it's chakras, shishumna, doesn't matter, always, always about how you hold the balance, because that is what defines your character. So as 2012 is approaching, it's so important for all of us to be very spiritually balanced so that we don't get distracted from who we really are. And this is why the Mayans made pyramids and put codified glyphs on them, so that we could come to understand, you know, the legacy of who we are, really are as spiritual beings. So 2012 will come and go, and yeah, there's a great opportunity for problems to develop, but there's also a tremendous opportunity to use our consciousness to do a lot of inner healing and the resolution of a lot of illusions that have caused us so much suffering for many, many hundreds of years. So I look at this as a great opportunity, and to be honest with you, I never really thought I was going to be taking people to the Yucatan, but to me, you know, God puts us in interesting situations, and all of a sudden here I am, you know, one group last year and now two groups this year, and so who knows what it'll be in 3 or 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
But my job is just to be of service, and I hope that, you know, when people listen to a broadcast like this, that they understand that all the equipment they need is already built in, and it's just a function of staying balanced within themselves that will do the most to help them empower who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Whether they take a trip to Yucatan or not, not important as much as they stay balanced.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And I certainly will be looking forward to signing up for one of your trips, because I think that you would be a great person to go with and
great.
To explain so much. And I've had the privilege of seeing your slideshows from several of your past trips, and what an extraordinary adventure that is for anyone at any level to get an understanding of this fabulous ancient culture and what they've left behind and what's going on, and get that source.
I have a lecture coming up April 30th, I believe, in Vancouver for anybody that wants to catch it. I gave the lecture in Calgary. We had over 95 people show up, and of course, you know, it's the pictures from the Yucatan, but also I explain their cosmology and the balance of the masculine and the feminine energies and the path to 2012 and why it's important. So, yeah, like you say, you know, there's a lot of information, and I think I have a way of packaging it that makes it very palatable.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I would agree with that. I like your slinky demonstration showing you how the energies and the frequencies were moving faster and faster.
The scientific slinky double pulse compression wave example.
Yes, it was excellent. And for someone like myself who's a visual learner, it was very understandable. There's still those of us who talk about your lecture and refer to that, because it does help explain some of these things that are hard to explain in a way for people to understand. And for those of us who grew up with slinkies, it was a little memorabilia there, so that was exciting
to
see how that could be used in science to explain some of this stuff. That was really great. Now, you're the Dean of Administration at the California Institute of Human Science. Now, where is that exactly located?
And Encinitas. Yeah, Encinitas is a coastal community of San Diego, California. So it's along the northern part of the coastline there. And The Institute has been in operation since 1992. And we offer master's and PhD programs in 4 different disciplines, but also bachelor's programs. And we also have these really great online programs that anyone can take. So right now, I have a psychoacoustics course that's being taught by a wonderful man, Denis Bada. And we have a student in France. We have some in Canada and the rest in U.S. taking this online.
Well, the internet has certainly transformed education,
Yes. Definitely.
And what are they researching at the research center beyond what you've already mentioned? Anything else that our listeners might be interested in?
We use a biophoton research, electrophysiology, which is EEG, EKG, blood flow seismograph. We also have a device that was invented by Dr. Moriyama called the AMI. It's a device that measures the function of the meridians in the body, which is quite spectacular because the meridians are the nadis or the channels of energy that an acupuncturist would use. They are invisible to physical science, but the energy flows along what's called the interstitial tissues, which is the most water-rich portion of the derma. And this device that Dr. Moriyama invented can measure the whole of the different meridian system and come up through the computer with a calculation of your general health. And of course, if you're a trained acupuncturist and you understand the meridians, you can see the total health of the person, even to the point where it talks about which chakras are doing well and which ones are not. And so right now we have a couple of PhD candidates using the AMI in their dissertation. For instance, one fellow is using the AMI on Zen Buddhist monks to see what is different when they go into meditation versus not meditation as to what energy is flowing along their meridian channels. So we have some really cool lab equipment at the Institute, and we're always, of course, loving to have students come and do research there.
Mm-hmm. I bet you have some wonderful discussions at lunchtime and during the break.
Oh, sure.
Very fascinating, very quite fascinating. Again, for those of you who are just joining us, this is Flying Higher on BBS Radio Late Night. I'm Gina E. Jones, and this evening Richard Jelusic, Ph.D., is with us. He's the author of Eye of the Lotus, The Psychology of the Chakras. And, Richard, where can someone get your book if they're interested in getting that? Are you in the retail stores, online?
Amazon has it, Barnes & Noble, almost any major retail outlet either has it or can get it for you. And, of course, if you want a signed copy, all you got to do is send through my website, and I'm happy to do that for you.
Okay, great. Well, that's very exciting. And do you have a date yet or any idea of when your next book will be out?
Yeah, I hope to be finished completely in May.
In May,
and
okay.
Then, and so stay tuned.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants to know what my sequence of events is, you know, on my website there's a huge calendar page, and it shows where I'll be and what I'll be doing, and, of course, information that you can click on there, too. And the healer's training is also on the website with the information. And if you want an information packet, just email me, and you can do that through lightnews.org. And then I'm happy to send it to you.
Okay. And for our listeners, in case you misplaced your paper with that information, Dr. Jelusic's information will be on our website, flying-higher.com. That's www.flying-higher.com, and we'll have that information available with links directly to his site and to his email so that you can contact him. And also this show will be archived. So for those of you who would like to hear it again or have friends and family who would like to hear it, it will also be in our archives. Now, something I want to ask you, because I'm doing my sort of personal exploration of this, but where does free will come in? Everybody talks about free will. Where do you see how this fits in the scheme of life, and what does that mean to you with all the research, the background, all the knowledge that you have? Where is our free will? Is there a spot between chakra 2 and 3 if we have free will, or where is that?
I'm so glad you asked. Think of yourself as an actor on the stage. You have your fellow actors, which might be your parental or familial karma or so forth. You have your script, you have your costume, your props, your settings. So you've got your script. How you read your lines, that's up to you. But you've got a script. In other words, you have a mission statement, you have a karma, what you came to do in this lifetime, what you came to accomplish, but whether or how you do that is strictly up to your free will. And that's the nature of free will, to choose among alternatives but how do you determine what to choose? So, for instance, what if it's a moral or an ethical question? You know, sometimes doing the right thing is not the logical thing. And so this is where, you know, the evolution of our consciousness comes in. As we go into a higher state of beingness, we start to see a bigger picture. So the more evolved you become, the bigger picture you see, the more right action you perceive, so you know how to act rightly. So you use your free will to make the best choice you possibly can among the alternatives. Mm-hmm. But what I tell my students is, trust what you feel, apply what you know. That means trust the intuition first, then you can apply logical thinking after. Because the higher sense perceptions are a higher, more eloquent way of seeing things as they are than just the perceptual, rational, pragmatic mind. So if you use your free will through your intuition, you're actually expressing yourself in an even higher way than if you were only doing it rationally. It's like Khalil Gibran said, you know, we must have reason and passion both. But what most people do is they don't understand how to use their intuitive abilities or that they even exist, so they merely operate only on the rational or practical side, and that's not an empowered life. It's just going from point A to point B. And it's not easy to trust your feelings because it requires a certain amount of vulnerability. It's not easy to open your heart, but that's precisely what we must do in order to emancipate ourselves from what I call the illusion of the third dimension.
Mm-hmm. I always just wondered about that, and just trying to explore that further, because I look at my astrology, the numerology, my cards of destiny, and they're so accurate. They're so right on. Even on a day-to-day basis, it's like, oh, where's my free will? It's like if there's all these planetary influences and things outside of myself, and now you're talking about the chakras. It's like, okay, so where is the free will? I sometimes wonder if we the free will was whether or not we decided to sign up for this. And after we got here and passed the veil of forget the free will.
Well, the chakras are you. They're just you on a higher level. And planetary influences are important. Like Edgar Cayce said, the planets are our masters until we become our own masters. As we evolve ourselves, then nothing can affect us.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. I had a friend of mine who does readings in astrology and numerology, and she sort of conveyed it to me in this little analogy, which sort of made sense. She says it's sort of like the elastic in your pajamas. She said you can stretch it this way a little bit or you can stretch it that way a little bit, but if you go too far, it's going to snap right back, and that's really, you know, who you are and what you're here and what you've signed up for.
And, so of course, you're talking about balance, right?
Right. Well, is there anything else that you'd like to discuss, or we could open up the phone lines and see if anybody has any questions for Dr. Jelusic this evening?
I think it'd be a great idea to open the phone lines.
Okay, great. All right. Well, if we have anybody who has some questions, you can call the toll-free number 1-877-270-8714. That's here in the U.S. Again, the number is 877-270-8714 here in the United States. And ask that you call in, and we'll have connect you with Dr. Jelusic and open up the lines here for communication at all levels, higher and lower, and through this wonderful tool of the Internet. Again, this is Flying Higher on BBS Radio, and we are exploring the Eye of the Lotus, the psychology of the chakras. So, Richard, what else are you doing when you're not doing all of these wonderful things? What do you do for yourself on a personal level? Do you surfing? You're here in California. What do you do stay in balance yourself?
I exercise. I work out. I love to travel and go to new places. And, you know, of course, the computer is usually with me where I go because there's so much to do on it. You know, but I have a wide variety of activities that I do. I love to take macro photography of flowers. Believe it or not, I got a wonderful picture of a fairy down in Yucatan in October of 2005. I love to record nature and nature sounds. So I keep a pretty busy schedule, but I always build in time to relax. For instance, you know, wherever I go, I've developed great friendships. So when I go travel, I always have friends to hang out with, and that's always a lot of fun. And of course, I love family, too. So when I'm at home, I have my adult kids, and that's always great.
Mm-hmm. And what does your family think about this? People that knew you when you were younger, have they embraced this information and your research?
Well, my kids are not kids. You know, they're 24, 26, 28.
Right.
They fully accept what I do, but none of them have externalized any of their gifts yet. But they have them, and they will in time. But, you know, they fully support me, and they understand my schedule, so they've been very loving and understanding.
Mm-hmm. And what about parents, siblings, or extended family? How have they reacted to the work that you're doing?
I'm not married. My father has passed. My mother will be 90 this year, and she's an amazing individual. She plays bridge 5 times a week, drives her own car, and I call her twice a day. She lives about 10 miles away, and in fact, we just had dinner there tonight before coming over here. So the family, you know, when I switched from engineering and whatnot and went into the ministry, they were thinking, okay, why is he doing this? But, you know, when you're driven from the inside to something you clearly know that you have to do, you know, when you're following your path like that, one of the things it does is it starts to alter family karma. So,
right.
Of course, the family's going to have some questions about, you know, why are you doing this? But now they see, you know, they see my work at the Institute. They see me traveling. Of course, here you and I are having a conversation. So, you know, this helps them to understand, at least I hope, you know, why I'm doing this and what is my motivation for doing this. And, of course, this will help people realize, you know, more of who they really are.
Right, right. Okay. Well, let's see. I'm just, again, just amazed at all that you do. I'm just trying to figure out here what else we could cover that we haven't gone over already. And is there something that I may have missed, something that you'd like to bring to light that maybe we haven't explored yet?
Going back to the star readings for a second, most people who come to a flower reading, like if someone told you...
We just put someone on air with you.
Richard, I think we have a caller.
Yes, you have a caller.
Okay. Sure.
Well, hello, my name is Richard, too.
Hello, Richard.
Hello. Yes, I had a question for you. You were saying that you could tell what is the predominant chakra that a person is working with?
Yeah, fourth.
Could you share that with me?
Fourth. Heart. Yours is heart.
Is it?
Anahata dominant. Yeah.
Okay.
Can I be direct?
Sure.
You're probably a very hopeless romantic. You probably lead with your emotions before your mind, although it could be you have a very fine analytical mind, you know, and that's always great. But, you know, my dad was also very similar. He was heart-dominant, but he ran a shipyard, so it's not always what you think it is. But heart-dominant people, because 95% of communication is not verbal or physical, most people probably think you're a healer, and they will take a psychic relationship to you, assuming that you're never going to run out of energy. So you got to be kind of careful in this lifetime because you are very empathic, and because of that, you have to be careful that you don't get drained too much. So it could be that you have some different levels of fatigue here and there, but fundamentally you are here in this lifetime to express more of the quality of what love is, which means you may or may not have been able to find exactly what you want to do yet in this lifetime as a functionality, but what you're here to learn is more emotional communication. That means how to express healthy boundaries and how to express the profundity of what you feel. Because, you know, the more I feel you, the more of a deep feeler you appear to me to be. How does that feel to you?
That resonates. I've been on a roller coaster of a journey for about 20 years now.
Yeah. Well, my advice to you...
Go ahead.
And my advice to you is, in this lifetime, you got to do what you love, but you have to put a value on it. You can't just keep doing things for nothing, and most people think that means money, but what it means is what is within you that is precious, or what the Buddhists call sweetness. Sweetness is a Buddhist word that means that within you which is already perfect. So you have to have a kind of ferocity about how much value you put on yourself so that you include yourself in the beauty of the love you create for others. Because you're a giver or a caregiver, you tend not to include yourself in all of the beauty you create in this world, and you tend to be a preserver, which means you love to preserve that which is pure in this world. So you tend to be a purist or one who protects things, and sometimes it relates to ecology directly, but not always. But that is the nature of who you are. So you start learning lessons in what your boundaries are and how to preserve yourself, or the balance that I speak of, you know, as above, so below. And as you stay in balance, then you reach equanimity, which means being calm in the face of any chaos. And then, from that point, then your life is very balanced. So that's probably why you've been flipping around here and there, because you may not realize that you're feeling what other people feel so clearly that it may take a little bit of your identity away because you're feeling their feelings so well. Make sense?
That makes sense. Yeah. also, I carry a disability with me in this life. Is that something that was brought on from a past life? Or
do you mind if I ask them what it is?
About 13 years ago, I had my leg crushed, and the bones were fused together, so it's a reoccurring leg injury, I believe.
One leg or both?
Just the left one.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I don't really get that it has anything to do with a past lifetime. It only feels that this lifetime. You say it was indeed crushed?
Yeah, they ended up fusing the bone together.
Really?
I ended up losing the knee.
Oh my. No, I don't get that it's from a past lifetime. It feels like something in this lifetime. Of course, you know, sometimes, you know, people look for metaphysical answers, and sometimes they're not always just the easiest thing to relate one-to-one to what happens, especially when people say, I had this happen to my leg, why did it happen? And sometimes the why is very hard to understand. And so sometimes when we take on such a profound injury like you've had, in some ways it sharpens us to be even more sensitive or more empathic to others. In some ways, in your case, it would immobilize you so that you have time to gather what you feel, you know, your life is all about. So heart chakra teaches not just healthy emotional boundaries, but it teaches you to accept a lot of purity that's in your heart. So in other words, if you ever sabotaged any of your emotional relationships in the past, your heart chakra is still you. It's just you on a higher level. But it would help you set up circumstances in your lifetime where you'd have an opportunity to learn not to do that. So my sense is, while that is in fact a disability, it may have also given you the opportunity to even deepen your feelings even more rather than go away from them, but rather to deepen them.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Where are you calling from?
Ohio.
Ohio. Well, nice to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you
again
for that.
Yeah.
That was great, Richard. That was the first time I've been able to experience your healings or readings over the phone. So it's nice to see that in action.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun to do.
Now, when you meet people in the store and on the street and people that you interact with, again, do you have a way just to turn that off, or is that open to you all the time? It seems like it would be sort of a overload.
I never walk into anybody's house without asking.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if I'm in a store, I don't just start reading people. I don't do that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if we have anybody else who'd like to call in, we have Dr. Richard Jelusic with us this evening, the author of Eye of the Lotus, The Psychology of the Chakras, and I'd be glad to speak with you if you'd like to call in. And again, Richard's website is www.lightnews.org, and you can reach him through the email, drjelusic@lightnews.org. And the phone number that he can be reached at as well is area code 760-420-8100. Again, this is Flying Higher on BBS Radio Late Night, And Richard, anything else that you'd like to explore or share with us this evening?
Oh, my goodness. You know, we've covered so much information. You know, there's a lot of writings on my website. You know, I do love to write essays. And I think people find them very helpful. At least I hope they do. So, you know, you're welcome to go to my website and look on the archives page. And I think you'll find some inspirational writings that will be very helpful. There's a good links page on there to lots of other activities and very fine healers. Like I said, the calendar page, the healers training page. There are some excerpts from my book on the website that you're free to read. And I love doing what I'm doing. I hope it's of help to people. And, of course, I love the program you're doing because, you know, through the Internet, it's a way to bring these programs into people's homes. They don't even have to leave the house.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Just a wonderful time we're living in when we can bring this information to everyone.
Exactly. Now, you mentioned the fact that you travel quite a bit. Have you explored any of the other ancient civilizations? Have you been to Egypt, or is there anything else that's captured your imagination or your interest besides the Mayan ruins in the Yucatan?
Not yet. I have been studying the Egyptians and the culture. As far as travel to take groups, I may take a group to New Zealand to study some of the ancient cultures there. You know, when I pray or meditate, I can see things going on in different places that a lot of the popular press and books don't cover. One of the nice things about the Maya population, or rather Maya astroarchaeology, is that there are wonderful authors who have been starting to cover the more spiritual aspects of the Maya beyond just the historical stuff. And we're starting to see this in other cultures. So Egypt has interested me, but not as much as going to a few other places on the planet. Right now, as you said, I'm spread pretty thin. So I'm sticking with the Mayans and may go to the land of the Incas maybe in the next couple of years.
Okay. Now, you've piqued my curiosity just quickly. What do you pick up as far as my dominant chakra?
You know, I was wondering if that would come along. You know, most people would say that someone who runs a radio program, as it were, would just have to be throat dominant, right? But I don't think so. I think you are a second chakra. That's sacral, or the one just below the navel. Remember, it's creativity, burdens, responsibility, sexuality, sensuality. It's the salsa of being a human being.
Mm-hmm.
So now...
And you say that one is most usually the most dominant for most people?
About 40% of the population tends to be dominant in that chakra.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you know what I'm saying. You could get 100 people who are dominant in the second chakra, put them all together in a room, not one person would be exactly alike. You know, there is a lot of differentiation.
Obviously.
But I think you're strong in the second chakra because I think you're able to create something from nothing. And I think that's one of your strongest attributes is I've seen people like you be able to start over with nothing. And just all of a sudden things come to you and you're able to get things going. And all of a sudden somebody shows up with this or with that and you're off and running again. So I think it's one of your greatest talents in this lifetime is to have an inspiration. And by the way, the greatest antidote for what ails a second chakra is always inspiration. Anybody that has a second chakra issue, you know, abundance, abandonment, abuse, all that comes second chakra. Inspiration is a wonderful, wonderful way to heal anything going on at second chakra.
Hmm. Well, thank you for that. That's very, very helpful. And certainly, I feel quite accurate. Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well,
okay.
I'm the master of many trades.
Well, I've sort of called myself a MacGyver many times. I feel like a lot of times I go into the world with my hands tied behind my back, or I have to come up with ways to work with what I have to make things come to fruition.
Right.
And some days that's exciting, and some days it's exhausting. But nonetheless, I guess it's what I've signed up for. And again, I just am thrilled to have you on the show this evening. It's been quite a ride, and I hope to see you again in the future here. We're both here in Southern California, and I've had the privilege of seeing you at the Mind Body Spirit Biz Network and then over at
right.
the Living Temple in
right.
Huntington Beach.
Uh-huh.
And I just applaud you for everything that you're doing and just want to support you. And again, just keep in touch and we'll keep everybody apprised of what's going on and would love to have you back on the show when you have your feet on the ground. And we
okay.
can reach you by landline.
Okay.
Again, this has been Flying Higher on BBS Radio Late Night. I'm Gina Jones, and I've been here this evening with Dr. Richard Jelusich. And I guess we'll just say good night, Richard, unless there's something else that you'd like to close with.
No, that's fine. I appreciate your show and what you're doing, and just blessings to you and all your listeners. And thank you very much for having me on tonight.
Well, thank you. Well, love and light to everyone. Again, good evening, and we look forward to seeing you again next Sunday at 7:30 Pacific Standard Time on Flying Higher. Again, you can check our website for upcoming guests at flying-higher.com, and we will have Dr. Robin Falcove with us. So I ask that you please join us for that exciting show, and for more information, again, go to flyinghigher.com. Good evening. Love and light to everyone. Bye-bye.